invites you for the next half hour to join us for interviews, discussion, inspiration, and for strategies to help you fulfill your potential, both in life and in business. Welcome to Remarkable Woman Radio. Today I'm talking to a good friend of mine, Rosemary Bova. Now, Rosemary lives in New York City in Brooklyn, and I'm very delighted to have you on the line today, Rosemary.
Thank you very much, Mandy.
Now, Rosemary, you have, I was reading through your media kit, now you have a very full background in management consulting, business consulting, and as executive coach, and a specialist in organisational development. So how did you get started down this track, and have you found that it is sort of weaved a little bit along the way, or have you sort of stayed true to where you originally started from?
Well, I think I would say it's been a winding road for me. A lot of that has to do with what roles were available to women, what areas women could work in. So when I started out, the corporate America, the only roles in corporate America for women were administrative roles, secretaries. And you had to start there, and I didn't know how to type. So I pursued a more traditional female career, which was social work. And as I did my studies in social work, I as much as I loved working and helping people grow and solve their problems, I really felt a yearning that I really wanted to work with a larger audience and make a bigger difference. So I took a very circuitous road to get from social work in the not-for-profit sector into corporate America and then into my own business.
Wow. And isn't it interesting?
Lots of ups and downs.
Yeah, lots of ups and downs, absolutely. Yeah. And I know even for me as well, when we left school, there wasn't as many opportunities. I mean, we didn't think outside the square like so many of the kids and you know, the young woman can today. And so it's quite fascinating that even for my children, that some of the jobs that they're in now weren't even there 5 years ago. So I find that just amazing.
Right.
Yeah. So just to sort of sit back and watch that happen. Now, I also see that you love to get to the heart of the problem, because I guess why wouldn't you? But I guess once you can figure out what's broken, then you can put a strategy in place to fix it. Is that what your expertise is about?
Well, I would say exactly. One of the things that was really outstanding in my graduate work in social work was learning how to listen and to have, good problem-solving skills. And I was able to transfer that to the field of organization development. I had never heard of that until after graduate school. And learning how to listen and hear what people are actually saying, but also picking up energetically what might be underneath what they're saying or behind what they're saying has really served me well. So I've been able to weave some of my intuitive skill into the problem solving. And when I started out, I focused primarily on behavioral issues. And I'm going to say later, must have been after about 15 years, maybe even more, I was introduced to work that really focused on structure, the structure of work and roles. And I've been able now, at this time in my life, to really weave together those two dimensions. So appreciating the importance of understanding the invisible infrastructure of roles, like the organization's spine. One of the metaphors I really like to use in my work is the human spine. And I go to chiropractic for my own well-being. And you recognize that discs in the spine, if they are ruptured or have subluxations in them, it causes pain in the body. It causes blockages. Energy doesn't flow. And the same thing is true in a corporation or a business. If the set of roles, how work gets done, is the organization's spine. And if there are compressions or ruptures or dysfunctionalities in how things are defined or designed, that is going to cause problems in the organization. So the work I do really helps people to look at how their structure is created or what outcomes of a poor structure might look like, and help them to figure out how to improve that. At the same time, it's also looking at behavioral issues so that people can become more emotionally intelligent, understand how behavior might be affected by structure, because it actually is. When people are in poorly defined roles, they are likely not to behave as well as if they were in a well-defined role, which gives them the freedom to act and apply their gifts to the task.
That's actually a very good point that you bring up. Like, a poorly defined role actually inhibits people, whereas a well-defined role lets them exercise more of their own creative and intuitive and and talents. You'd think it actually would be the opposite way around, wouldn't you? That if there was a poorly defined role, they could sort of make it their own. But just what you're saying, or what I'm hearing, is that once it's more defined, then they kind of know where they are and where they can take their role. Is that correct?
That's correct, because they have much more freedom to apply their own imagination and creativity to satisfying the requirements of the role. It's when you don't have that clarity about the role that people start, behaving a bit oddly. Mm. And the other thing about this is that it always puzzles me. I'm still puzzled by it, that people talk about reorganizations. I was at an event recently where there was mention about how many reorganizations of corporations have been going on in the U.S. And it's a very high number. And the other high number is that they don't work. They're not working. So the companies are not getting the benefits that they thought they would get. And what happens is that they often, they don't look deep. It's almost like they just skim the surface. So they'll talk about culture, but nobody wants to do the really rigorous work of looking at roles and how roles interface with other roles. So it's easy to look at the vertical hierarchy, but how does, one department, roles in one department relate to another department? And, what authorities do people have? What are they accountable for? I find this work fascinating, but I also find that it takes a very special person who really is willing to do the rigor that goes with that work. But then you really are transformative, because the results are really transformative. The release of innovation and human imagination is significant, and the cost savings are extraordinary.
Yeah.
Because you see where you have a lot of duplication, where there's so much waste, and and once you have the release of human imagination and creativity in companies, that's where you're going to get your greater profitability, because that's where you're going to design a new product or a new service. You're going to have people excited and engaged. And we just are not doing that to the extent I think it can be done.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually, because I'm all about talking about inspiration, the spirit within, and when you can align the people that work for you to the company's mission and vision, and then when you actually take it to a deeper level like you're speaking about, where you can really begin to make sure that all the interfaces of the different roles are all working together. I mean, that is probably one of the secrets to an organization that is on fire, that can create that release, that human inspiration, as you said. Because I was actually, one of my questions was going to be, what are the major problems do you see in business today, or what do you perceive as missing? And obviously one of them is the connection between all departments and that, but what else do you perceive as missing, Rosemary?
I think there's what is missing is a sense of camaraderie. I think, I'm speaking primarily now from a U.S. perspective, but I think many surveys are showing that the level of disengagement of the American workforce is over 66%, I believe. And of that percentage, there are about somewhere between 13 and 15% who actually admit to thwarting any attempts that their executives try to improve things.
Wow.
So people are actually negatively working against the corporation because they're angry, and I believe they're also very fearful. So you would think that they wouldn't do something like that if they're fearful, but I think the American worker has a lot of fear of job security, and a lot of people were hurt during the recession, and they lost a lot of their retirement incomes. Many jobs were lost. So people don't trust corporations now. And they also see the disparity between executive compensation and what they're earning. And so there's a lot that's wrong, but I also think that every worker has to start taking some more personal responsibility to their
To their role in the corporation and everything.
To their role, to who they are. Mm. I mean, I think we've had a long period of greed, and where everything is about, shareholder value and I think we're unbalanced with that. I think we have to have more we, more of a sense of community. I think, yes, we want profitability, but we need to really, look to work our cities and, have our cities thrive. You can't have just a small segment of the population thriving and the rest of the world
struggling. Yes, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. Now, Rosemary, I also saw on your website, because I love having a look at what everybody's up to, that you love to, there's a couple of things here, but the first one is that you for entrepreneurs, that some things that you offer them is that they need a trusted strategic thinking partner, because often, and I can speak from experience, when you're building your own business, that sometimes strategy doesn't become, it probably needs to be more of a priority, but sometimes it's just getting things done. So working with someone like you would, I imagine, be quite an advantage to any entrepreneur.
Yeah, what I have created are what I call strategy and inspiration sessions, and they are probably like it can be as 3 hours, a half day, where I work with the entrepreneur to really kind of, first of all, get grounded and focused, but also talk about what are they trying to create here. Because we get entrepreneurs generally are ever busy. They're always working, but they're into the doingness rather than the beingness of their business. And I have one person in mind that I'm thinking of, and you know, she's brilliant, and she's got a very, you know, she's got a number of different businesses. But she has never really focused on the infrastructure. And so she has, you know, she's been in business for probably 30 years. And she has a lot of people that are with her, have been with her for 30 years. And they're being paid well, but the business has changed. And she really hasn't looked at, and she's just beginning to do this, to look at whether or not these people are in the right roles. Should they still be there? You know, how does she create, you know, a new structure for her businesses that will enable her to be more profitable and give people more opportunity to grow and develop?
I think that's a really good point, isn't it? You know, just actually, because what you're bringing up is actually the ability to ask some great questions and to be around someone that can help you find those answers. And because we all know that the quality of the questions we ask will dictate our destinies. So I think, so that's brilliant. Rosemary, you've created a white paper, which is a really interesting piece of work. Are you going to be turning that more into a book that we can perhaps get our hands on one day soon?
Well, I'm not going to give you a date when you're going to get your hands on it, but anybody who wanted the white paper can contact me, and I would be happy to, you know, send them an electronic version of that. But what the white paper talks about is some of the stuff that we've already talked about. It talks about the importance of distinctions at work, for example, between management, leadership, supervision, and what is good management. It also provides a formula for assigning tasks to people. I think assigning tasks is a lost art, and I know I get in trouble myself all the time because sometimes I think I'm narrowing down the task to be done and communicating that to either an employee or an independent contractor. And sometimes I'm being too broad, and they need much more specificity. By giving this formula to both the manager and the person in the subordinate role, you empower the person in the subordinate role to ask for what they need. And that so it's a very interesting dialogue that can take place, ensuring that the work is going to get done. And I've been really rethinking this of late, so I'm not, my thoughts are not totally solid here, but I think I'm on to something in terms of the importance of the personal responsibility of workers to get the kind of information and scope and expectation by asking questions, not just being on the receiving end.
I really
and I
like
think
that.
The art of dialogue. I think the art of dialogue has suffered because people are not asking each other questions.
Yeah, and
everybody's rushing around.
And then I think you're right, too, but taking personal responsibility, it's a two-way street. Just to sit there and take all the time, it doesn't work, and that actually leads to more dissatisfaction. Now, now also, you have been doing a lot of work in the area of women over 50. Are you able to tell us a little bit about that? Because it's a hot topic for a lot of women.
Well, I think it's, I'm very excited about this work. I really feel that, women here, but I think all over the world, are have the opportunity to live longer. And many women have not been encouraged to realize their full potential. I think younger women now, today, have a different ability and experience, you know, to experience themselves to their fullest. But those women who are, you know, around 50 or over are, you know, were not brought up that way. And so I think for many of them, they were, you know, their cultural background influenced where they went and what they did. So
yeah,
for me as an Italian American, I know that there were many, you know, and many of the women that I grew up with, you know, parents wanted them to get married and have children and keep the family going. And I know for myself, I just wanted to see the world. I was yearning for knowledge and exploration and experimentation. And, you know, so many of the women that I grew up with, you know, that's how they lived their lives, and my life is a little different. There's a cost to that also, because sometimes you feel like, why isn't everybody doing that? And it's just recently that I realized that I probably had a lot more courage and conviction than they did. But I think a lot of them are finding themselves now, like, now what do I do? You know, what can I do? And I think this idea of, there's so much ageism in the U.S., it's really sickening. And, you know, you know, women are in particular more so than men, although men are doing a lot of plastic surgery and using fillers and things like that. But women, you know, are so afraid of growing old, of you know, losing their beauty. It's really unfortunate, because there's no appreciation of the feminine elder. I don't like the word crone. I don't know where that word came from. But I never liked that word.
No.
Because it always looked like a kind of an ugly kind of
Black bird.
Person. I don't know. Yeah.
It's an old bird.
Yeah, there's something beautiful about a woman who is in her
prime. Should we say
in
prime?
Her elder years. In her prime, in her elder years. And, you know, particularly one that has done her work, knows who she is, and can, you know, step out and guide other women and help them to explore who they are, so that they can be, they can fully authorize themselves to what they want to do.
Thank
and I just think there's a lot of opportunity between older women and younger women and younger men. I think that we need the both end. So that's I've been playing with this when I think of of editing the article and rewriting the book, the work of calling it both end. I think it's both end.
Yeah, I agree. I like that, the both end rather than the either or. Mm-hmm. We're getting to the top end of our interview, Rosemary. So what would be a piece of advice that you either wish you'd been given or that you did actually give yourself that helped you?
I would say to everyone that each of us is a unique being. And there's no duplicate unless you're an identical twin. But there's no duplicate of you. And each of us has been, you know, enters this world with unique gifts and contributions to make. I think it is so important to instill in children that they are wonderful and they are special. But they also have responsibility. And I wish I had a lot of that growing up early, But then, you know, their life took a turn when I was about six. And, you know, those messages kind of somehow went away. So what I took away from that was, well, all of that might not have been true. It's taken a long journey to recognize that both end, all of that was true.
Mm.
And, you know, so you sometimes think it's so important to realize that we are all special and that it is okay to share your concerns and fears with others.
Yeah.
I really think holding that alone is very sad to me. And I think it's a cause of a lot of mental problems and physical health problems.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Thank you so much, Rosemary. And now for those of you who'd like to find out where to contact Rosemary, her website is bovaenterprises.com. Is that correct?
You're just correct.
Yeah, great. So that's bovaenterprises.com. Rosemary, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it. And look forward to having you on the show again.
Well, I hope so. And it's been an absolute pleasure for me, Mandy.
Bye for now.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Looks like a girl, but she's a flame. So bright she can burn your eyes.
Listening to Remarkable Woman Radio. You can catch us again next Tuesday at 3:15 on 104.6 FM or anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/remarkablewoman. We'll see you then.